The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Another Sunday morning with the comedy show of Aaron Elizabeth and Bob Martin at We the People Radio. Hey, we slid into our seats with 20 seconds to spare, didn't we, Bob?
We did.
Yeah.
You know, that's a long disclaimer. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need that whole disclaimer.
Yeah. I got to know if anybody else does it the way we do it.
I don't know.
I mean, most people like to get there early, have a cup of coffee, chit-chat, catch up.
Oh, that's kind of a buzzkill. Last week, anybody I talked to said, "You guys sounded so relaxed." Because it was afternoon.
We were about 2.5 days early last week.
Yeah. But it was afternoon.
We had tons of time.
Afternoon, boy. Just, you know, hanging.
So if you were tuning in for the first time, you were joining We the People Radio, as you probably guessed, with your hosts Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. We talk about all things under the umbrella of fiscal responsibility, limited government in adherence to the Constitution, fast approaching 3 years worth of archived shows. I encourage you to go to wethepeopleradio.us. Everything about today's guest will be on that webpage, as well as individual links to every show that we have done. And we've covered everything from fiscal issues. We've touched on the Federal Reserve, a lot of property rights issues, overspending, under-delivering, you know, everything that falls under that big umbrella. And if you scroll on the right side of that webpage, you will see all of the shows that we've done, tons and tons of information. A lot of it truly is not information that you will get in any mainstream media source. So I encourage you to check out any of those shows. And we do try to focus on issues that affect people no matter where they live. And anything that's happening in our community is probably happening in yours as well. So go to wethepeopleradio.us. We're calling in at 530-605-4567.
Yeah, and how about sending us topics? Topics and or guests. We're always looking for topics and guests.
We are. And, you know, we've talked about this before. We've had a lot of people on the show that have written books about issues that are near and dear to them, but also affect people everywhere. And those authors are usually, they're not making a living off of the books that they've written. A lot of times they're self-published, but the research is incredible. And we've had books on ranging from everything from regionalism to the Forest Service. So kind of interesting to catch up on that stuff. And if you do know of an author, another radio show host, we've had a lot of radio show hosts on our show as well, because they are in the good fight with the rest of us. So anything you might happen to hear, anybody you know, send us an email at, and yours is Aaron at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yep.
With show ideas.
E-R-I-N. Super simple. Yeah, because, I mean, that's the best way to do it. You know, you read a book or you see somebody. The biggest thing I look for is, a lot of times I get emails from different outfits, you know, and it has a little article written by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, just kind of a snippet. And you're
right.
Thinking, oh, I wonder if that person's a...
And I think all of our guests throughout the month of May have been people that we have either met or we heard them speak somewhere else. And their issue struck a chord with us because of something similar we might be dealing with here in our own neighborhood. And so that's how we find folks.
And I'd tell you who we have coming next week, but I left my calendar in the car.
It's Dr. James Enstrom.
Is it?
From UCLA.
That's why you know, because you set it up.
He is the guy that blew the whistle on CARB. We're getting a lot of whistleblowers coming out of the woodworks.
Hey. I have the whistleblower's whistleblower.
You do?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you should...
You have a whistleblower's whistleblower?
Yeah.
What is a whistleblower's whistleblower?
That's the guy who was a doctor. I'm not sure what kind of... He was a physician.
Mm-hmm.
A physician doctor. And down in San Francisco, and was working with hospice out of one of the hospitals, and discovered, and I just got this kind of shorthand last night, but he discovered that they were using a bunch of the funds that should have gone for, like, oh, you know, candy bars and, you know, movie rentals and stuff like that for the patients there at hospice.
Yeah.
In this hospice program. And they were, the hospital was like scamming this money and just using it to send their people on, conferences.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, crap like that.
Well, it's like the personalized license plates in the state of California.
Yeah, that are for 9/11 or whatever.
If you paid for a personalized license plate in tribute to 9/11, all those funds were supposed to be used for, I don't remember what.
I think it was like the victims of 9/11
or something. Yeah, of course, that's never what happened to the money. I don't know. You got to know who you're giving your money to, I'm telling you.
And then a lot of people who went through hospice and it was, you know, for the families, it really helped them and stuff. So mm-hmm. they donated to the program, and it turned out a ton of this was just, it was all being siphoned off by the hospital. So this guy, kind of long story short, blew the whistle on him, and they absolutely went to war with this guy. He went to, the attorney, a general in California, and he went to all these different outfits and, hey, what about this? What about this? Well, they crushed him. And basically put it out there that he was a lousy doctor, mm-hmm. and he got fired and blah, 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 ruined his reputation and all. So he ran it through the courts. He came back. The judge ordered that they put up a big plaque with his name on it in the lobby that was, like, dedicated to Dr. So-and-so for his, like, they made the...
Good.
They made the...
Good.
Whoever the head of the hospital is, do some big speech about how great he was.
Nice.
It was a bad deal. But he... he got a, like, $750,000 mm-hmm. settlement mm-hmm. on this thing. Well, he's using that. He's turning around, and he's wants to carve a niche for whistleblowers.
Nice.
He wants to support whistleblowers.
Is he going to be on our show?
I'm working on that.
Great.
So that
Excellent.
More people will come out
yeah.
and not have to fight that right. battle alone, because we've seen that over and over and over,
sure.
On the Klamath Dams and whatnot. Somebody says, hey, I think this is screwed up, and it's like, oh, we're sorry, and a trap door opens mm-hmm. up, and whoosh, they're
yeah.
gone.
Well, and the beauty of a show like ours is that...
We get to do it?
Well, we're not mainstream, and I know that we've got, quite a following from all over the country, and, for instance, our guest today is from Southern Utah, and so I'm guessing that there's going to be some folks in Southern Utah that are going to be listening to this radio show for the first time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What it allows is it allows the opportunity to get the story out. Over and over and over, and we're going to be talking about Southern Utah's spotted owl, which is actually the prairie dog.
Little rodents.
Yeah.
Oh, sure,
yeah.
They're cute yeah. and everything until somebody wants to save them.
Yeah, or until you destroy your economy because there's no development.
Because
of the prairie dog.
It's all about prairie dog. Yeah. it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
We should come up with, we should all write down, like, the one whatever, mm-hmm. animal, bug,
Speaking
whatever.
Of which,
and we should write it down, and like, the least likely to be saved,
yeah,
right? We
right.
should, like, high school,
yeah.
least likely to succeed. Let's do, like, least likely to have anybody care about and try to save. Put them in envelopes,
Yeah.
And put them away for 10 years, take them out and see how many of those.
Bury them in the ground in a time capsule.
Yeah, see how many of those little things they save.
Oh, and speaking of animals,
yes.
I had an eagle fly into my yard this morning. I kid you not.
Did it take anything?
Is there another bird that has a white head?
Dogs?
Well, this is a good reason why you never leave your little dogs outside by themselves.
Yeah, they stole our lamb. We had an eagle strike on one of our lambs.
But I had an eagle fly into my yard.
Nice.
It was amazing.
That's a good omen.
6 o'clock in the morning. How cool is that?
It's a good omen.
Yeah, so...
For patriots, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. That's completely off topic, but I just thought it was really cool.
It is
we
really
love
cool.
off topic.
Yeah.
We live for off topic.
So,
I had to throw out, to our webpage, wethepeopleradio.us, that has all the archives and stuff Elizabeth was speaking about. That's all put together by Robert Ekstrom,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and he does that at,
yeah,
at no charge. We're a volunteer army.
Yeah,
here.
And if anybody thinks that Aaron and I do all of this ourselves, we don't. We've got Bob Martin, who is fantastic as our show producer, and I encourage anyone listening to the show to pay very close attention to the music, because every single song is selected specifically for the topic of the show. And sometimes they're serious and sometimes they're hilarious. So pay really, really close attention to the songs that he picks and the lyrics, because it makes every show. It's a slam dunk. So thank you, Bob.
Thank you so much for the kind words, Elizabeth. Yes, last week we were serious. This week
we had a serious topic.
Yeah, we did have a serious topic.
And you had amazing, amazing music for that, too. Yeah, music is like our other guest.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
We don't let it talk very much.
And Robert does a fantastic job with our webpage. We send him all the information for our guests, and He works late into the night to put that web page together every Sunday morning.
Exactly.
So that it's ready for you, the listeners, to follow along.
And about probably about 12 or 1 today, the Listen Live button that you might have clicked on to get to the chat room actually turns into the archive. So you can email that page, and somebody just clicks the button, and poof, they can hear the whole show.
And I wanted to just point out that We the People Radio every Sunday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Tune into Sovereign Minds every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on this same station. And definitely check out a tea party near you, anywhere where you may be, because that's where the good fight is being fought. Get involved.
I guess I should also mention, if you have the TuneIn app on your iPhone, or your Android phone for that matter, if you search shows for We the People, you can find all of our shows archived there as well, or a lot of our recent shows from the last year or so, at least. Yes.
See, it's getting out there. You never know.
Did not know that.
All right, so let's take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest that Elizabeth set up, so I have to actually read the thing because I've never talked to him. So his name is Matt Munson, and we're talking about private property, land use issues.
And the future fight with the Pacific Legal Foundation. I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
On Prairie Dogs. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR, 1460 AM, community radio for the North State. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good.
Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
What did I tell you? I knew you were going to play that song, Bob. I was going to ask you to, and I thought, I don't need to ask. He'll do it. First one out of the chute. That's awesome. That's the song they used to attribute to Democratic women. Did you ever hear? Did you ever? You know what I'm talking about, Bob?
Who are they?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, who
oh,
used to?
Oh, there was like a YouTube parody, and it showed Republican women versus Democrat women, and they showed pictures of all the Democrat women, you know, in key positions, you know, like Pelosi and Clinton and all of that. And that was the song that played along.
And the super handsome ones like Janet Napolitano.
Yeah, that was the song that played along with the photographs as they, you know, flipped through them for the key female positions in the Democrat Party. It was hilarious. Anyway, you are joining We the People Radio.
Thanks to the individual on YouTube with the misogynistic sense of humor.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's created all those bad visuals for us.
All right, so we've done our chit-chat and our catch-up, and we're going to get straight to our guest. We're talking with Matt Munson. Matt is the public defender for Iron County, Utah. He has taken on the fight for the Prairie Dog, and I'm not going to go into all the details because that's his gig this morning, but he's a busy man, and he started an organization called PETPO, which is People for the Ethical Treatment of Property Owners, which is a great play on PETA. I love it.
I like that.
I think it's hilarious. And they've managed to get the Pacific Legal Foundation involved in this fight, which is awesome. They've been on our show before, and they're good at what they do. So, Matt, how are you this morning?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great.
Good.
Thanks
good.
For hooking up with me earlier in the week. I know you were super busy.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I really appreciate what you guys do. I think it's fantastic.
Great. Well, thank you. So, hey, let's start off with a little bit about you. Give your bio, but then tell us how you got involved in this battle over the Prairie Dog. And most people are not going to assume that it's a battle at all because they're actually cute little creatures.
Yeah, it really shouldn't be much of a battle. first and foremost, I guess, is the fact that we're not dealing with, both sides agree, we're not really dealing with an animal whose numbers are low or endangered in any way or threatened in any way. What we're dealing with is an animal that, for a lot of reasons that we'll talk about, chooses to live on private property as opposed to on public and federally controlled land. And so that's what we're really dealing with is we're dealing with an animal at their count. We have about 500% of what would be required to take the animal off the endangered species list. I mean, so we're not dealing with something where, you know, we've just got to get the numbers up. It's a matter of where do they live. And right now, well, for the last 40 years, they've wreaked havoc on privately held and controlled property as opposed to living on federally controlled land, which is interesting when you consider the fact that 70% of the state of Utah is federally controlled land and owned land. And so 7 out of every 10 acres in this state would be fine for them to live on, but they want to live on property where there are no predators, you know, that gets watered regularly, that gets cut regularly. And if you were a prairie dog, you'd probably feel the same way. But that
sure.
doesn't negate the fact that, you know, that we're dealing with private property rights, which in my view are sacred.
Now, Matt, how did you get involved in this in the first place?
Well, to say that I stumbled upon it is probably the best way to put it. When my wife and I relocated our family here about, well, it's been almost 3 years ago, as we were looking at different properties to purchase, some that were vacant lots, you know, to build upon, and others, you know, that had homes on them. One theme that we noticed as we spoke with several different real estate agents in the area is they said, you gotta be careful where you buy and what you buy, because if there are prairie dogs on the property or close there too, you're gonna have to deal with that. And so I said, what do you mean? And one agent told me, I thought he put it the best way. He said, you could shoot your wife in the head and get away with it long before you could shoot one of those and get away with it.
So what?
I said, what?
That's okay. What's the penalty for harming a prairie dog?
Well, it's a felony offense because it is a threatened species, and there again that all boils down to the fact that most of them live, you know, in our area in southern Utah. About 90% of these prairie dogs live on private property. You know, and there again, you know, when you consider why, first of all, when somebody comes and develops the property, they flatten it all out. Well, prairie dogs like it. I mean, if they have their druthers, they'd rather live on flat land as opposed to land where there are things that would obstruct their vision, you know, so that they wouldn't be able to see predators and that kind of thing. Private property is also, I mean, most people who have lawns and that kind of thing, they water them very regularly. Prairie dogs like that. I mean, it's nice, lush, green grass. And the other thing is they're going to cut it about every week during the summer. And so they're not dealing with tall grasses. Prairie dogs won't live where there are tall grasses because they want to be able to see their their surroundings and be on the kind of lookout for different predators. But I kind of got involved there again, just kind of stumbled upon it. I didn't take a single environmental law class in law school. I've never been involved with a matter or an issue like this. I will tell you, I spoke at the first Tea Party up in Salt Lake City at the federal building up there, the very first one that they ever had up there. It was an honor to do that. But, so I've always kind of been politically, involved, haven't ever been involved in an issue like this. And I was approached by a few different people and asked to kind of take a look and see, you know, if there was something I thought we could do. And, you know, my response was always, I don't know anything about prairie dogs, nor do I really want to.
That's how it always starts.
I'm sorry?
I said that's how it always starts.
It always starts, innocently enough. I was listening to the radio, talk radio, one night, and there was a county commissioner on there. I'd never met him, but he was talking about this issue and just the economic devastation that these prairie dogs have caused to the entire southern half, really, of the state of Utah. And he said, you know, we need some legal help. And I didn't think, you know, I didn't really think much about it, but there's something within me kind of stirred at that time, but I didn't act on it, didn't call into the show, didn't do anything, but something kind of stirred. Well, I ran into the president of the Home Builders Association the next week, and we kind of got to talking about this, and obviously there's been an impact upon them. I mean, the number of houses that they're able to build and the fees that are associated with clearing prairie dogs off the property. Now, when I say clearing prairie dogs off the property, I don't mean that they come and trap them. I don't mean that they move them, which, you know, you would think they would do if they're truly concerned about the health and well-being of the prairie dog population in the area. No, I mean, if you pay a certain amount of money, you can go ahead and build, and if the prairie dogs die in the process, that's more than fine. Just you know.
Oh, it's okay as long as you pay ahead of time?
Yeah.
Put down a deposit?
So, yeah, and so, yeah, and that fee sometimes can be, you know, in most instances, is several thousand dollars. Mm-hmm. There's a Ford dealership here in town that developed some land, and they paid almost $100,000 just to be able to get a permit, just to be able to build. And that was to be able to clear a few prairie dogs off the property. And so where I come from, that's called extortion.
It is here too.
So I don't know. They call it a take fee. And we kind of joke, you got taken. Yeah, you sure got taken. And what they say they're doing with that money is they're buying other land. You know, that other 70% of the state, that doesn't cut it. We got to buy more land. That is just ideal habitat for these prairie dogs. And so they will take the money, you know, from somebody who wants to build on their own property. They'll take that money and then they'll go buy more federal land. And see that, and that adds to the argument that we've made all along, which is this isn't about prairie dogs. This is about land control.
It is.
And the gun issue. I mean, when you look at that, it's not about guns. It's about control.
Sure, right? Exactly. Now, are prairie dogs like our coho salmon and our spotted owls and all that? Is the science all completely bogus? And I went through, the whole country, actually, over and over and over. We saw zillions of prairie dogs as kids. Uh-huh. I can't imagine they're endangered.
Now the blood's going to shoot out of your eyes here.
Okay? Oh, I knew
so
it.
If you're not sitting down, please have a seat. One thing that the very first meeting that I went to, so I told you I met with the president of the Home Builders Association. She said, you ought to meet with Commissioner Dan Webster. And I said, is that the guy? You know, I think I heard him on the radio about a week back. And she said, oh, probably. And so she set up and arranged a lunch. And so I went to lunch with this commissioner. And the next day they had a meeting. And he invited me to that meeting, and at that meeting they were talking about doing a DNA test. Now this has been going on since 1972. There's probably been enough time between then and now to have done a DNA test to determine whether or not the Utah prairie dog is in fact genetically different than the Gunnison prairie dog or the black-tailed prairie dog. It's, you know, for example, but that hasn't happened. So we've spent untold millions of dollars. It was in 2011 they announced that they thought they would need about 30 more years and only 106 million more federal dollars in addition to the state and local money
to run a DNA test.
Prairie dogs. I'm sorry.
To run a DNA test.
No. Oh. Just to get them off the endangered species list. They didn't address that DNA test at that time. So at that meeting. That very first meeting that I went to, they said, well, okay, we'd like to do a DNA test, but the cost just prohibits us from being able to do it. It's about $100,000 to do this DNA test. And so we worked and we talked to them and we kind of hammered and said, you know, hey, we've got to be able to do this DNA test. I mean, at the end of the day, if we don't even know if these things are different genetically than any other species of prairie dogs, why are we protecting them? I mean, what's that based upon? And so they complained about the price. Well, they finally were given the funds from the state in order to be able to do the DNA test, but they said the test would take about a year. And so we said, well, what takes a year to do a DNA test? As an attorney, I'm aware of DNA tests that are done in a week's time if they need to be. And so we said, you know, what's going to take a year to do the DNA test? Well, they got to do this. You know, it's just the bureaucracy. I mean, they kind of had an excuse for why it would take so long. So we kept following up with them to say, okay, well, hey, you know, is there a way that we can expedite the test? Can we pay for, you know, overnight shipping to get it here a little bit sooner? I mean, what can we do?
Can we pay for somebody smart?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and so about 6 months into the process, we had another meeting with them, and I asked them, I said, okay, well, where are we at on the test? I mean, any preliminary results? What are we seeing? And I was told at that time, we were all told at that time, they're not going to do the test. And they said, the reason we're not going to do the test is they said, we don't think, there again, sit down, if you stood back up, sit back down. They said, we don't think that the people here will like the results of the test. And so we're not going to do the test because they said, we're afraid of what we'll find. And so we said, well, what does that mean? I mean, we've got to let the chips fall where they may. I mean, if they're different, they're different. If they're not different, they're not different. You know, are we trying to steer the results? I mean, what's going on? And they said, well, we're afraid. Well, what if we find some subspecies and that kind of thing? And so he said, if we find subspecies, then we find subspecies. But we got to do the test. I mean, we can't keep going down this road spending all this money if we haven't even done the test. And so he said, no, we're not going to do the test. Well, so our group decided that we would try to look into having a DNA test done ourselves. If they didn't want to do the test, we would try to do our own test. And so we figured that the way that we could try to do that is to try to find dead prairie dogs. I mean, there are dead prairie dogs all over on the side of the road here in southern Utah. So, you know, a lot of funny things came to mind. I'm sorry?
I said a lot of funny things just came to mind. Sorry about that.
And actually, you'll get pulled over if you swerve at one or that kind of thing. You can actually be pulled over, you know, for having hit one of these creatures.
Oh, so
well.
If
you're up on the sidewalk trying to hit one, and that's the thing is our group doesn't advocate trying to kill these things. We've never said, hey, kill them, hunt them down, shoot them, you know, poison them. We've never advocated that. All we want to do is move them. We want to keep every one of them alive so that there are more to move, actually.
And, you know, they do that in Colorado. And maybe that's the Gunnison prairie dog that you were referring to. But I guess that they come in with some giant machine that's like a giant vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
And they suck these things up, and then they go transport them to rural areas.
Yep. Are you kidding?
Yep. I'm not kidding.
No. And that's actually, see there again, that would be much cheaper to do it that way than it is the way that we're doing it. And you know, it's one of those things where we tell them all the time, we say, you know, what you do speaks so loudly we can't hear what you say. Because if you ask the people here that, there are between 2 and 3 dozen people here in Cedar City and in the area here whose jobs are to manage the Utah prairie dog.
Oh my.
In one way or another. I mean, they're doing studies and tests, and they're building nest boxes, and they're doing counts, and they're doing enforcement where they got people out spying on people at the golf course, issuing citations if they swing a club, you know, as they're driving by. I mean, seriously, I mean, it's
oh my God, we're having the same stupidity here. One of our fake endangered species is the coho salmon, but you can buy them at Costco.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's the, yeah.
It's
and,
the
and
same kind of deal.
That's the issue here is, you know, there are so many inconsistencies with what's being done as to what's being said. So as it pertains to that test, so we told everybody in town, we said, hey, if you see a dead prairie dog, let us know because we want to come out. We're just going to pull a plug out of it, you know, take a sample out of it and ship it up to Salt Lake. And so we were going to do that throughout southern Utah so that we were getting a nice sample from throughout the, we didn't want to get them all, you know, on the same road in the same part of the same county, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so we did that. Well, you wouldn't believe what happened next after we let everybody know, hey, if you see a dead prairie dog, you know, let us know. Guess what started happening to all the dead prairie dogs that have never ever been cleaned up off at the side of the road? DNR
like
and DWR
rapture.
And fish.
Oh, all of a sudden they disappeared. All
like
the dead ones.
Yeah,
they
the prairie...
started scraping them up.
Yep.
Yes, yeah,
prairie
yes.
dog rapture.
Dead serious. Yep, they started scraping them up. You know, the DNR and DWR trucks and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife trucks. You'd see them stop gathering up these carcasses of the dead prairie dogs. And doing who knows what with them. But we weren't able to do that. And so we had to go to plan B, which was to approach some of the farmers, in the area here who get, permits to be able to lethally take prairie dogs, off of their properties. You know, there again, I'm not aware of another endangered species that, you know, they just issue, you know, permits. You know, you can go ahead and kill, you know, you got too many bald eagles, all right, well, you can go ahead and kill a few, here's your license. And so we approached a few of them, a few of the farmers, and told them, you know, there again, we didn't hide it, it wasn't secretive, we wanted everyone in town to know what we were doing. Well, we approached a few farmers, and one of the farmers, actually, when he went in to renew his permit, told them, he said, you know, I'm excited to be able to do this, you know, get this, because I'm going to, you know, give the dead carcasses to people for the ethical treatment of property owners because they're doing a DNA test. Well, this farmer's been farming for about 40 years, and he's been trapping, and so that's the way they do it. If it's in the county, they can shoot them. If it's within city limits, they have to trap them, you know, and then they can just keep them in the trap until the prairie dog dies in the trap. And he's been doing this about 40 years. Well, he called me and told me, he said, I've got you know, three prairie dogs here. They should be dead by tomorrow. They're in a trap, you know, I'll wait. Well, he goes out the next day because he didn't want to remove them because, you know, if you try to remove them out of the trap, they're pretty feisty little critters. And so he just said, I'll just leave them in the trap, and if they don't eat or drink overnight, they'll die, and they've got to be eating and drinking enough. And so if they stay in the trap for an entire day, they'll die. So that's what he's always done, is he's always just left them in the trap, and he goes back the next day, and they're dead. Well, you wouldn't guess what happened to the prairie dogs, to the three prairie dogs that he had in his trap.
More rapture?
No, they were gone.
Yeah, oh. More rapture.
There was some kind of a predator or something that was smart enough to open the traps.
Would that be a two-legged predator?
Could you say fish and wildlife?
Yeah. And this happened two times in 3 days with this farmer.
Wow.
And this farmer had nothing to do. He didn't know anything about anything. I mean, he just, you know, knew what, you know, what he was just going to call us when he had the prairie dogs. And so I said, well, what, you know, he said, I've been doing this a long time and I've never had a prairie dog get out of the trap ever. And all of them have gotten out of the trap two times now in 3 days. And I said, well, what, you know, what's your explanation? He said, well, I've got flags because these are in the middle of an alfalfa field. And he said, I've got flags there where the traps are so we don't run over them with the tractor or a combine. And he said, the only thing I can think of is, he said, the property next to mine, there were some DWR and DNR officials that were over
exactly.
there trapping right next to mine. And he said there were two girls over there, and they spent about the whole day over there. And they each, of course, had their own truck. There were two trucks, and then there were two DNR or DWR employees
over there. And
that's
a whole other topic. Overspending of tax dollars.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, hey, they can't drive around together. Right?
Hey, we're going to grab a quick break.
Okay, Matt, hold that thought. We're gonna come back and... Unbelievable. You know, just when you thought California was the stupidest place on earth, we joined Utah, which is sad but true. We'll be right back with you in a couple of minutes here at KCNR.
Just,
smells just like prairie dog.
I did not lie when I said Bob is a master of the music. Hey, you got to jump on the chat room at wethepeopleradio.us. It's hilarious today. This is a very serious topic, but, you know, we're having fun with it. Oh, hey, Matt, so look, before we go to our next break, which will be in about 6.5 minutes.
We're tardy.
Because we were tardy on the first one. Talk to us a little bit about the economic impact in Iron County. And this has been going on since the 70s, and I believe that in 2018 this plan is up for renewal. But let's talk about the economic impact.
Well, as we look at the economic impact, there's really not a whole lot, economically speaking, that the prairie dog hasn't impacted here. For example, and I guess I'll start it, this is probably as good of an example as anything. Cedar City should have a super Target store here. We've got a Walmart, just a regular Walmart store here, and that's kind of the one place, one-stop place to do your shopping here in Cedar City. But we would have had a Target here in town, and you can imagine how many jobs that would have created.
Mm-hmm.
Target came in and acquired the rights to some land here, only to run into the prairie dog buzzsaw. And they were told that it would take about 10 years worth of getting their take every year before they could begin to develop that land. And so Target moved on. Target's not going to hang around for 10 years and pay the fee and do the thing that, jump through all the hoops that they've got to jump through in order to be able to build. So Target left. Well, so you can imagine, that right there in and of itself is probably 100 jobs there, not to mention the construction costs and the sales taxes and different things that would have brought into the area. We've got another business here, the Western Quality Foods, that had looked to expand. And they had a few dozen jobs that were well over the median household income in annual salary. They weren't able to expand because they weren't able to get the permits to be able to expand. The golf course here in Cedar City is called Festival City USA. And the reason for that is I guess they've figured out Cedar City has more parades and festivals and whatever per capita or per year, whatever, than any place in the country. There's, in the summertime especially, there's a parade every weekend for something. It's the Shakespearean this, there's baseball tournaments and there are summer games and there's all kinds of activities taking place in Cedar City. It's a beautiful area. And people love to come up. It's up in the mountains. It's a beautiful place. The people here are wonderful. And it's, again, it's called Festival City USA. Well, as we look at, the impact that it's had on the golf course, here, we play reverse golf in Cedar City. If you hit the ball and it doesn't go into a hole three times, then you've made par. You've done really well. If you hit it off the tee, it's probably going to go into a hole somewhere. It may not have a flag there, but it'll probably go into a hole. The golf course is just infested with prairie dogs. They're all over the place there. In fact, for the last couple years, I believe they've trapped over 500 a year off the golf course. And the golf course has told me, they said, we think that we are just the nursery for fish and wildlife. Because they say, they're never going to die over here because there's no badgers, there's no hawks, foxes, coyotes, eagles, raptors, any predator over there. There's no predator over there. There's a bunch of guys wearing funny-looking pants, that carry on golf clubs. That's the most threatening thing to a prairie dog over there. St. George is about 45 minutes away from Cedar City. St. George, the climate there is much different. It's very, very hot in the summer in St. George. They would love to come up here. There are a lot of retirees there. They would love to come up here and golf because it's much cooler up here in the summertime. It's just a different scenery up here. It's up in the mountains. They'd love to come up here and golf. But no one wants to come here to golf because our golf course, for all intents and purposes, is a joke.
Yeah, it's like Swiss cheese.
And a few years ago, there was an effort made. In fact, Fish and Wildlife, everybody had signed off on exterminating every last prairie dog, whether by poison, you name it. However we got to do it, we're going to clear every prairie dog off of the golf course. And there was an injunction filed the Wild Earth Guardians. They came in here and said, you can't do that. These are an endangered species, that kind of thing. And that put the brakes on that. There wasn't any challenge to that injunction. No one stood up and said, hey, no. This is private property. We're going to do what we want to do here on our own land. No one stood up to that. I wasn't in town at that time, and it's not to say that I'm the only person that can stand up, but if our group had been around at that time, there certainly would have been a challenge made to that. But devaluation.
Oh, yeah, let's touch on the airport, too.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to the airport and then the cemeteries. When you look at property devaluation...
Oh, my gosh, I didn't think of the cemetery.
When you look at property devaluation, the Utah State Tax Commission has ruled for the last 3 years in a row now. They've ruled that a 50% devaluation in a person's property is not sufficient, based upon the stigma of having prairie dogs on your property. I mean, you can have a beautiful property, but if there are prairie dogs there, your value just went through the floor because people know it's almost impossible to get them off. Now you don't even have to have prairie dogs on your land for your land value to go down, because if there are prairie dogs next door, the writing's kind of on the wall. You're probably going to have prairie dogs on your land at some point. And so if you're selling your house and you don't have prairie dogs on your land, but your neighbor does, your property value has decreased substantially. As we look at the airport, the Parowan Airport has been struggling for years and years with prairie dogs there. And the prairie dogs, what they've done is they've gone under the runways to the point where the runways have sunken now, because they burrowed
nice
under there and the land has sunk. The governor actually, a few years back, we had a state senator here that passed away. The governor would not allow his plane to land at the Parowan Airport because it's such a hazard. There are flight schools up in the Salt Lake Valley, you know, when they're out doing their test flights. The Parowan Airport is blacklisted. They will not allow them to fly in and land at the Parowan Airport. And if they do, they're no longer allowed to take classes from that school because it's such a hazard. The Parowan Airport, they always have had these, I'm trying to think what they're called, kind of the kite, I'm trying to think what they're called, they've got these festival there where they have these gliders come in.
Oh,
and
sure.
These, you know, the gliders, the little guy flying around on a kind of a big kite.
Yeah, like hand glide.
Does that make sense? Like a hand glider, yeah. And there's
paragliding.
And, paragliding, that's what it's called. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Anyone who
that's
is
only because I've done it. I've done it once. I know what it's called.
Well, they've had these paragliding festivals and things there that have brought in a great deal of revenue to Parowan for years and years and years. Well, once the prairie dogs moved in, that has kind of gone away because people just realize it's a matter of time before somebody dies on that airport. And nothing had been done about that. Now, if you look at other airports throughout the U.S., in fact, there was one over here in Colorado last year that they took and they poisoned and they shot, and in fact they cited people if they allowed prairie dogs to stay on their land if they were around that airport because it was such a hazard to that airport, you know, and they didn't want people flying in there in a plane and crashing the plane because there were prairie dogs around. And so but our airport nonetheless was allowed, you know, the prairie dogs were protected. I guess it's okay if they burrow under the airport runway at the Parowan Airport, just not the airport over in Colorado.
Unbelievable.
That has changed.
We have to take one more quick break, Matt. Sorry, hold that.
Okay.
Hold that thought.
No,
we'll be right back with you in 2 minutes. Thank our advertisers.
Okay.
We're here at KCNR, 1460 AM. We're speaking with Matt Munson. Don't want to miss this show, folks. We'll be right back.
After the top of the hour, let's get into what the battle is right now, the Pacific Legal Foundation. I want to talk more about PETPO, but before we do that, we did have a question on the chat room asking if you had ever gotten a DNA test on the prairie dogs, and also we want to finish up with the cemeteries because they're having a good time with that on the chat room.
Can Carl ask a question here right quick before the top of the hour?
We'll do all that when we come back.
We have Carl Bott, who owns the radio station, calling in with a question. Hi, Carl.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, sorry,
we had him muted. It's a new trick we've got. Go ahead, call in. We'll just mute you.
Hey, Carl.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hey. Oh, good morning. Great show.
Thank you.
Hey, what happens if you just have, and I don't know if you'd mentioned what we have up here at a place called Cedarville, which is Squirrel Wars, and people from all the United States come for like a week or two and help to thin out the population of these pests.
Well, here's the situation, and that's a good question. Where we're at is something that our group has tried really hard to do, because there is a lot of talk here. I mean, there are people who have all kinds of solutions as far as different concoctions that you can make and different things that you can do. For example, some people will plant sorghum and other crops on their property, which prairie dogs don't agree with, and so that's one way to kind of clear your property of that. But we've told everyone that'll listen, you know, we don't want to kill the prairie dogs. Right now we got to play by the rules, that were of the game, as it were. But at the end of the day, the rules help us. And the rules are that under the Constitution, for the federal government to be engaged in the management of a particular species, there's got to be a reason why the federal government should be involved. One of those reasons, for example, would be the Commerce Clause. If there is any industrial use or religious use of a particular animal or its bones or its fur or et cetera, the federal government can get involved under that. If there's any interstate commerce, if the species, you know, crosses state lines, you know, for example, between Utah and Nevada and Utah or Arizona or Colorado or Idaho or Wyoming, one of the bordering states, the federal government can get in through that door. The federal government can't get in through either of those doors, because the Utah prairie dog is limited to about, there's about five counties here in southern Utah that the prairie dog is limited to.
Matt, sorry, we're coming up on a hard break. The news is going to cut us off.
We've got 5 minutes for some coffee.
We'll be right back in 5 minutes, guys. You're here at KCNR 1460 AM, community radio for the North State.
Hour 2 of We the People up next here at KCNR Shasta Reading.
You are joining Hour 2 of We the People Radio. We are chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. I encourage you to check out that webpage. We're going on 3 years of every topic under the umbrella of limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution. Everything about our guest today, Matt Munson, public defender for Iron County, Utah, battling Fish and Wildlife Service and the public grab of private property rights and control. We all know what it's about.
Under the name of saving the prairie dog,
which is California's squirrel or New York's rat.
Yeah, everybody's on the chat room talking about, well, gee, it would be great if we endangered squirrels in California or rats in New York. I mean,
my greatest fear is that someone in Sacramento is going to hear that and decide to declare squirrels an endangered species in California.
Take that back.
Well, if it provides jobs. Hey, so Matt, let's chat just a little bit longer about what happened with
can I tell you what wound up happening there at the airport?
You bet.
I hope I answered the owner's question adequately there. It would be very easy for us to, if we were to encourage people to go out and do some different things, I'm afraid that we would invite an even greater involvement from the federal government if we were to do that. And so that's why we've opted to to try to play within the rules as far as just getting them off the endangered species list. And if we can get them out on the federal land as opposed to have them on private property, that can be done in pretty short order. And we don't see a reason why that can't happen. It's just enough people have had to wake up to put enough pressure and enough heat on some of the folks that have gotten away with us for 40 years to make some of that happen. Let me tell you, last summer, the total cost around the runway there at the Parowan Airport wound up being almost $750,000.
Oh.
They put a fence around there that was made out of concrete and river rock, and it was, I think it's 6 feet deep with river rock and mesh wiring and then concrete above ground and that kind of thing. And the thing wound up costing about $750,000. It's three-sided. I would tell you that. Now, if you were to let your dog out in the front yard and you left one side of the fence off, do you think your dog could get out into the street?
I think even the dumbest dog could figure that out.
Yeah. Well, they built a three-sided fence. The other side is a natural, barrier. Prairie dogs, you can fit them in your pocket.
Brilliant.
For them to, maintain that they can't get through this natural barrier, and then they had to build a fence that was, 6 or 8 feet deep and then above ground a few feet and do some other things. Anyway, they spent all this money. They got some grants and they got some money, and the city of Parowan had to put in some money and donate some resources and do some different things there. They put that fence in last year, and so we, kept asking the question, why is it a three-sided fence? Why couldn't they put some decon out or just, go out and exterminate them at a much, at a cost much less than what they expended on the fence? About 2 months after they did that, we had finally, had gotten enough people to do enough things to make enough noise that at one of these meetings, we finally got them to agree to amend the 4D rule, which is one of the, which is the way that these farmers are able to be able to remove the prairie dogs. It's under that same rule. They amended the rule specifically for the Parowan Airport and the Paraguna Cemetery. Now, the Paraguna Cemetery, they've built four fences all the way around their little cemetery there, all at the specs provided to them by U.S. Fish and Wildlife under the guarantee of every time they built one of these fences, hey, this one's going to work, this one's going to keep them all out of there, you don't worry about it, this is going to do the trick. They built four fences, and finally now this last fence that they built, that they started building. They started building knowing that the materials that they were building with were not those that they had actually themselves required be used, and they built about half of it, and then they stopped, and then that's when the 4D rule was amended. And the 4D rule now allows the Parowan Airport and the Paraguna Cemetery, if there's a prairie dog within the parameters of these structures that have been built around them that have just been our eyesores and have cost a ton of money, they've said you can clear the prairie dogs out of there. Now, does that apply to every cemetery and every airport? See, the Cedar City Airport has prairie dogs on the property as well. The Cedar City Cemetery has prairie dogs in the cemetery as well. No. That doesn't apply to all the cemeteries and all the airports. They've got to fight their own battle.
And pay their own fees.
And pay their own, exactly right.
Who's designing these fences? I mean, is the Border Patrol doing this?
I think so many jokes about Homeland Security.
Yeah.
We asked them at a meeting, we said, you're building a three-sided fence, and you think, we said, you could get a herd of buffalo walk shoulder to shoulder onto that airport runway. You think you're going to keep a prairie dog out of there? And the answer, the response there from the head of Fish and Wildlife here in Southern Utah was, that was the best design that our engineers came up with.
Oh, wow.
Well, I don't have any engineering background, but I guarantee I could have built a better fence than that.
Yeah. What happened with the DNA test?
Okay, so back to the DNA test. Sorry, I get so excited talking about this.
Yeah, we do too.
I really appreciate you guys giving us a venue to kind of spread the word
because that's been our biggest struggle. That is what we are all about, I guarantee
right
it.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's fantastic because we've used our local talk radio station here several times. Mm-hmm. They've had us on, different people on to talk about this. I mean, that's probably the hottest topic here and has been for decades.
Sure.
But the DNA test, So we told them, you know, we were going to try to raise our own funds and do some things after, you know, and we were going to try to get some samples from these farmers. Well, we had another meeting with these folks. They threatened to have me and some others arrested for threatening to possess an endangered species. You know, we're like, well, these are dead prairie dogs. I mean, they're dead. They're either going to sit on the side of the road. But they said, well, you have to have a permit if you want to have them in your possession, which you'd have to have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you wanted to. Or tampering with them. You can't even tamper with a dead one to be able to get the sample unless you
that
have the state permit and the federal permit. So we said, okay, great. We said, you guys have got the permits because you guys move them and transport them out. And you guys, you know, they always say, well, we're on your side. You know, we're on the people's side. We're trying to help the people. So we said, okay, well, great, you're on our side. So will you just come around because we need somebody to have that permit. Will you just be in the truck while we go, you know, pull a sample out of a dead one on the side of the road or one that a farmer has been able to trap or shoot? Will you do that? They said, no, we won't do that. So they said, we're not going to help your group at all. And so we said, okay, well, so we had the county commissioners approach them. And the county commissioners said, well, will you come with us as the county commissioners, you know, to do this so that we can do this DNA test? And they said, no. See, we had found at the University of Utah, the DNA lab, that we, you know, we had them look into how many samples we would need and, you know, what it would take to be able to do a viable DNA test that would hold up in court. They said it would cost about $15,000, and they said it would take about 10 days. Well, the government's version was $100,000 in a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we told them, we said, well, you know, it's going to cost us $15,000. We have the funds. We have the funds. We can do it. The county was going to pick up most of the tab for that. But they denied us those permits. They wouldn't give us the permits. They wouldn't allow us to use their permits. And so we've had the county attorney's office and the attorney general's office, we've had several folks kind of putting pressure and trying to be able to get these permits, which we should not be denied. There's no reason, because they haven't even done a DNA test themselves.
Okay. You know,
we're trying to do something that they haven't done and that they should have done. Well, about 2 months ago, you know, because there again, we've had folks that have kind of kept the pressure on these guys to be able to get these permits so that we can do this DNA test. About 2 months ago, the county commissioners here in Iron County got a call from the head of Fish and Wildlife here in southern Utah. And she offered, she said, well, I'll tell you what, we think we can get this DNA test done for about $50,000. You guys want to go in on it with us? And they said, no. You guys just sign the permits. We'll do our own. We don't need your money. Thank you, though. So she called back and said, well, how about, we think we can do it for, you know, about $30,000. And they said, no, it's okay. Well, she found a coupon, and now it was down to $20,000, and I don't remember exactly how many times she called back, but she called back several times. She finally came back in and said $5,000, and they said, no, we don't have. Finally, it was $1,000, and they can have, quote-unquote, their guy in Denver do the test, and that test is going on right now. Now, I'll tell you, I'm not at all convinced
kidding.
That this is going to be a real test. I mean, the guy, their guy for $1,000, I would admit, they laughed us out of the room when we told them that we were going to do a DNA test for $15,000. They said, you can't do a DNA, it's going to cost $100,000 because you got to do hundreds of samples. It's got to be done through, you know, Nevada, Arizona, Utah, Wyoming, Idaho, Arizona, et cetera. From all these states so that you get a broad enough sample and blah, blah, blah. You can't do anything for $15,000. Well, they found that they can do it, I guess, for $1,000.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so we've told them, you know, whatever your results are, which we're confident they're going to be skewed and steered because you've at every point indicated that you're afraid of, quote, unquote, what you're going to find.
Sure.
We still want to be able to do our own test to be able to verify through our own testing, what you're saying the case is.
So, Matt, just to point out the seriousness of this issue, because we're having fun with it. I mean, we know it's serious, but we're having fun with it. But you told me that you've received death threats due to this, this battle.
Right around that time where we had the meeting with a group here, that was, and there again, the name of our group, People for the Ethical Treatment of Property Owners, that first group, that first meeting that I attended was a group called the Utah Prairie Dog Recovery Implementation Program, or UPDRIP. Some people, well, the Utah Prairie Dog, its initials are UPD.
Oh my God.
If you spell it out, it's UPD, and then R.I.P. So a lot of people say, you know, Utah Prairie Dog, rest in peace. Spells the same thing. They asked me at that meeting. See, I was the only person from the public there that wasn't either an elected official or a member of DNR, DWR, BLM, Fish and Wildlife, Forest Service, you name it. There were about 35 people in the room, and about 25 of them were members of those different agencies. But it's a public meeting. And I told them, I just said, I'm just Matt Munson from the public. And they said, well, you need to be with an organization. And I said, I'm just Matt Munson. I'm just here to, you know, somebody asked me, I happen to be an attorney, but somebody asked me to come and kind of get a feel for what's going on here. So I said, well, you need to be with an organization. And I said, okay, well, I'm with the People for the Ethical Treatment of Property Owners. It was just kind of a, ha-ha, you know, PETA has, you know, the animals have advocates. Well, what about property owners? They don't have any advocates. And so that's kind of where that started. And so where this is veered is, you know, as you look at the seriousness of this issue, there's just not many places that this doesn't delve into people's lives here in Iron County. I mean, there have been several jobs, lots and lots of jobs that have been lost because of, you know, because of what it's done to the, you know, what it's done to the economy. There are all kinds of things here, you know, that have ruined people's lives, literally ruined people's lives. I mean, a lot of people who had bought land on speculation and that kind of thing, they're bankrupt. Why are they bankrupt? Because prairie dogs moved onto their land. That's the only thing that went wrong. Right, and now their land's worth half of what it used to be.
We're going to come right back so that we don't wind up with all the breaks at the end of the show. But we'll be back with you in two minutes. We're talking here with Matt Munson. Out. I'll just let the music speak for itself. Forget what we're talking about.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
Take your damn time round the
prairie dog town.
Don't put your trust in the prairie dog. Rob your bank and steal your jars. Stay in the car behind the grass, or you might get a big shot peeping that ass.
You are joining We the People Radio with your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. Oh, Bob, that was brilliant. Hey, Matt.
Believe it or not, that was Bruce Hornsby.
Hey, Matt, just wanted to tell you there's somebody on the chat room that's offered to send all of his Filipino friends and relatives down to Cedar City because rumor has it the Filipinos like dogs.
there would be plenty here to do.
Hey, Matt, let's chat a little bit about, and I wanted to say that that you guys are getting, you're getting the word out really well because you were recently featured on Fox News with John Stossel. You know, you've got you got a guy in your community that wanted to fund his retirement by buying a piece of property, subdividing and building some homes, and he's been stopped short of doing that. And let's talk a little bit about the plan, because this plan, I believe, doesn't it reset in 2018? Yep. And how did the Pacific Legal Foundation come into the play? And I know you probably can't talk about a lot of details, but if you look at We the People Radio, if you go to read it, WeThePeopleRadio.us, you will see links to the interview with John Stossel, the Pacific Legal Foundation video about the prairie dogs in Cedar City. So all the information is there if you're following along. Okay, Matt.
Yeah, and if folks want to visit the website, it's petpo.org. We like most of these types of organizations, we're a volunteer army, and it's just been comprised of volunteer citizens and folks doing what they can to help out here. But the Pacific Legal Foundation got involved. It's been about a year, maybe a year and a half ago now. They had read some things online and read some things in the paper about what we were doing. And they approached us and said, well, hey, you know, we're looking at possibly looking into your case and seeing if it's something that we may be able to help you out with. And we thought, well, how many times have you gotten something in the mail that says you may be a finalist, you may win $100 million? Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't sit around and wait for that to happen. we didn't think there was any chance Pacific Legal Foundation, you know, would help our little group here in southern Utah. And so we didn't put a whole lot of muster into that. We thought, well, if we hear back from them, great. If we don't, I mean, that's much more likely we probably won't. Well, they contacted us in a few months from that point and said, well, hey, you know, if we're looking more into this and it's looking more likely that we may be able to take your case. And so we said, okay, well, that's great, you know, but don't get our hopes up, guys, you know.
Sure.
And so they had to go through several levels of approval, because what they're doing is they're using really, again, kind of sacred funds from people that are donating to Pacific Legal Foundation.
And for those that are not aware, of the Pacific Legal Foundation, they focus on private property rights, and they've made it to the Supreme Court 7 times and won 5 out of those 7 cases. So they're pretty heavy hitters. Yeah.
They're usually able to resolve these issues prior to, you know, before getting to the Supreme Court. And so, you know, there's a lot of these cases, you know, they told us when we started this process, they said, if we get involved and this kind of thing starts to really ramp up, they said, the level of cooperation you'll see from the feds and from state officials here too, they said, will be unheard of. You're going to see them do things that you've never seen and, you know, seen or heard them do, which we've noticed. I mean, over the last year, I mean, for 40 years, they couldn't get a fence around that airport. For 40 years, couldn't get a fence around the, or, you know, they couldn't, you know, get them off of the cemetery, couldn't get them off of the airport. The fees that people have been charged, those have all gone down. They've done some things to kind of make it easier. But at the end of the day, a private property owner still can't call up and say, you know what, I don't want them here, I want them gone. There's nothing a private property owner can do short of getting out their checkbook. And that's wrong. I don't care if it's a dollar. It's a dollar more than it should be.
Sure.
And so Pacific Legal Foundation, you know, they're, again, they went through several levels. They had to have, you know, several levels of approval. And they told us it's 6 or 8 months ago that they were going to be able to take our case. And we had them come out last October and you know, do several interviews and meet with several people and kind of go around. And they were just kind of astonished at what they saw. I mean, it looks like the moonscape, you know, on a lot of people's private property, because there's nothing they can do. I mean, the ground is just bare dirt, because nothing grows, because the prairie dogs chew all the roots and do some different things that way to just destroy your land. And horses and cattle and sheep, I mean, there's a lot of agriculture, a lot of farmers here. You know, how many horses and cows and sheep have broken their legs and had to be put down? We talked to the Southern Utah University, which is a university here. The former president of that university said, Matt, we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to replace equipment, because, you know, this equipment would fall into these holes and whatever and get broken up and different things. You know, at the end of the day, the money, if you don't consider the money that's already been spent over the last 40 years, just what they want to spend over the next 30 years, and this is just federal money, this isn't state money or local money. If you just consider what the feds want to put into it for the next 30 years, it's almost $40,000 per prairie dog.
Oh my
God. That they want to move out onto federal land. That's more than the median household income in this county.
And for all of those people listening who think that this doesn't affect you because you don't live in Utah, those federal funds are your tax dollars.
Yep. You're paying for it just as I am. And so what the issue, you know, and again, what it boils back down to is control and land control. And to be quite honest with you, I think there are several people whose jobs, you know, they don't want to cut their own throats. And if they move prairie dogs out onto federal land and have success doing it, you know, in a couple years as opposed to the next 30 or 40 years, well, they've worked themselves out of a job, essentially. What happens is if they acquire land, whether, if you know, if they purchase it or if it's their own land, it takes about 4 to 5 years before they can put a prairie dog on there. Now, because first of all, you got to do a soil study, and then you got to do a vegetation study, and then you got to do an archaeological study, and then you've got to prepare the land by putting nest boxes, and you don't want these prairie dogs to have to dig their own holes and build their own houses, right? So we'll just put a little nest box down there for them, and then we put little plastic tubes that go down into those nest boxes so they don't even have to dig their own holes. And then, you know, so that sounds like, you know, that sounds like paradise for a prairie dog, right? I mean, they don't have to dig. They got their own house. I mean, we're giving them a house. We're preparing the land. We're making it just so, oh, and they've also got a dust for fleas because these prairie dogs carry something you guys may have heard of. It's called the bubonic plague.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may have read about that at some point. You know, it doesn't do real well.
I heard it was
either.
A killer.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah, it's had a negative impact on people's health historically. they dust for these fleas out on federal land. Now, do they dust for fleas on the ballparks where our kids play baseball, on the ball fields, or on the golf course, or in people's backyards, or in the cemetery? Anywhere where these prairie dogs are interacting with humans, they don't dust in any of those places because they don't have the funds to be able to do that. They just do it on federal land so they don't kill each other. But your dog or your cat that goes around and rolls around in the dirt, or your kid playing in his own backyard that's playing in the same dirt where a prairie dog lives, they're kind of on their own as far as flea protection because it's the fleas that transmit the bubonic plague. Now, if you look on the Department of Interior's own website with the national parks, they'll tell you not to get within 10 feet of a prairie dog because a prairie dog that is infested with the bubonic plague and has a flea on it, a flea can jump 10 feet. And so they say, you know, remember the 10-foot rule, don't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Well, they don't bother doing that on private property, just public land.
Are you
allowed
to?
That's another thing they've got to do to
Are you allowed to dust that on your own land? Or you?
Well, you'd have to purchase that at your own expense and apply it, I guess, at your own expense. I don't know any place around here that sells the flea.
That's what I wondered.
You know, bubonic flea killer. But it's 4 to 5 years. Now, here's the interesting thing. After they've spent all this time preparing the land, making it just right for these prairie dogs to be on, we're making it prairie dog paradise, right? We've spent years preparing it. We've built them nest boxes and dug them, put the little tubes down into the nest boxes, and we've made it just so. In most cases, more than 90% of the prairie dogs that they transport out onto federal land die within a year. And so when you do the math, we've got to have 3,000 prairie dogs out on federal land before they'll take them off the endangered species list, and they've got to be out there for 5 years. If you do the math, how many do you have to move out there if you take 10 out and maybe one survives?
Well, how do they know if there's that many? What do they GPS them?
Well, it's just they count them, and you know, there again, their counts. I mean, do they want the counts to be high or do they want them to be low? I mean, exactly. They won't allow anyone else to go out and count them. They won't allow anyone else to be involved in that process. Why? Because then you kind of get to look in on. You know, they're saying one thing and doing another, and that's the examples of that are just, I could give you thousands of examples there.
So Matt, what's the end game for the Pacific Legal Foundation?
Well, the Pacific Legal Foundation, we filed a lawsuit about 2 weeks ago, and that's, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and we finally filed that lawsuit. Since we filed that lawsuit, I mean, this issue's been on the front page of the Washington Journal, I think.
And you made Fox News?
We were on Fox News' website on the front, like the top, the main article on FoxNews.com last summer. They had William Longines come out and do kind of an investigation and a report on this. And, you know, he kind of asked the million-dollar question. I mean, it didn't take him long to kind of drill down. And he just said, if the prairie dog is a keystone species and you need the prairie dog, you know, out there on the prairie where prairie dogs are supposed to live. Because of, you know, all the things that feed on the prairie dog and that live in the holes the prairie dogs dig and different things. He said, well, you know, you're not getting many of them out onto federal land. You're just kind of content to let them stay there on private property is what it looks like to me. And they said, well, no, it's just, you know, we're trying to figure out the best way to do it. And, you know, it's only been 40 years. I mean, you can't expect us to figure it out overnight.
So and before we go, we're going to take a quick break, but does this 40-year plan sunset? In 2018, did I understand that correctly?
No. That's just the Habitat Conservation Plan.
Okay.
And the Habitat Conservation Plan is a whole other issue. That's what sunsets. And so they're trying to get another HCP, which is the acronym for that. But they want to basically do the same thing that they've always done, which essentially is proving we're not any closer today than we were in 1973 to having Utah prairie dogs recovered.
So your lawsuit is to gain state control over
is
this
to get
prairie
the feds,
dog
and
issue.
I'm going to tell you what, the reason PLF took our case is they said this is the perfect case for us to take because they said there are hundreds of species that are being managed
nice.
By the federal government
okay.
that they have no reason being involved in every state.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we think this is the best one of those.
Perfect.
And they said, if this one goes, they said, there's going to be hundreds of other species
nice.
In other states that will be able to make the same argument.
Okay. Oh, from your lips to God's ears. All right, take
yeah.
a quick break here. We'll
yeah.
be right back with more on the unnecessary prairie dog. That's what we'll call the show. You're here at KCNR 1460. The home of Free Fire Media.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's the same.
10 million years ago today, the world was all brand new. And all the animals had no homes. They didn't know what to do. So the prairie dog said, I'm going to dig me one. I'll dig for all I'm worth. So he dug and he digged and he digged and he dug a deep hole in the earth.
I don't even know what to say.
That's
God,
where,
Bob,
that's
where
did
you come up with? Where did you come up with this stuff? Who was that?
That was Smiley Burnett.
Jeez. That was the prairie dog song.
From 1847.
Yeah. Nice. Hey, so
funny.
Aaron just pointed out, we were having a little chuckle, the petpo.org website, People for the Ethical Treatment of Property Owners. You can become a member. You can be an endangered member, a threatened member, or a delisted member. And you can get a t-shirt. And Aaron said she's doing it.
I'm totally doing it. That is the funniest dang thing I've ever seen. Okay, Matt, this is what we need. We need to have petpo chapters everywhere. Like we need Petpo
California
for sure. We
hope to be able to provide a solution. Yeah. Well, and it's groups like ours that are going to have to make the stand here because right now there are 500 additional species that are that they're trying to get put onto the endangered species list and therefore get protection.
Yeah, they just called
government.
Last week with frogs. They want a toad and a yellow-legged frog and some other stupid frog that no one's going to miss.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and there's bugs and there's vegetation and there's different things mm-hmm. that are protected. That if we don't stand up now, it really is going to get to the point where people are going to wake up one day, you know, due to the gradual erosion of property rights, people are going to wake up one day and realize they don't have property rights anymore. And
well,
that's really what has made America America, is that you can own land, you can control your own land, and that's slowly slipping away. And it's sad and shameful to see.
How many folks have pulled together in your organization?
At the last count, I believe they said that, I want to say they had 350, something mm-hmm. like that, here in Iron County. The thing is, I've kind of been out of the loop. As we prepared to file the lawsuit, and there may be more than that, when we prepared to file the lawsuit, I had to step away as being the president of the group so that I could be the local attorney representing the group when we filed the lawsuit.
So what's the time frame what's the time frame on the lawsuit? It was filed 2 weeks ago. And
what's
the basis of the lawsuit? What is, in layman's terms, a synopsis of what the lawsuit says?
A synopsis of the lawsuit is essentially what I had indicated our arguments are, and that is that there is no commercial or industrial use associated with the prairie dog, and so the federal government can't get in under that.
Under the commerce clause.
There's no commerce there. There's no interstate commerce as far as the prairie dog, you know, the Utah prairie dog existing in another state. You know, most species, they cross state lines. I mean, there's bald eagles in a lot of states. There's gray wolves in more than one state. You know, there are a lot of these species that you hear about. They're in Washington and California, or Oregon and Washington, or Idaho and Montana, or et cetera. They acknowledge, everyone knows the Utah prairie dog, if it's different than the Gunnison prairie dog or the blacktail prairie dog, only exists, according to them, in one state, in only one part of one state. And so for those two reasons, but then also under the police powers, granted, I mean, that's the federal government's number one job, is to protect American citizens. The federal government's number one job is not to maintain highways, is not, it is to protect American citizens. Knowing that we have an animal that carries the bubonic plague that has killed human beings, there's a little girl over here in Colorado that got bitten by a flea with the bubonic plague about a year ago. She almost died. She had a fever of like 112 degrees. And the doctor didn't know how to treat her. The doctor didn't know. They tried everything they could think of. And the doctor remembered reading an article in a medical journal several years before about the symptoms of a person that has a bubonic plague and treated her for that, and it saved her life. But they make no big deal out of it here. The health department here has cited the bubonic plague, the spread of the bubonic plague, and the infection of human beings with the bubonic plague as among their greatest concerns. But you sure wouldn't know that by talking to DNR and DWR and Fish and Wildlife officials. I mean, they act like it's just like the common cold. Oh, it's no big deal. Don't be worried about that. Jeez, doesn't even hardly kill anybody. What are you worried about? And so we're not necessarily worried about a breakout like in Europe that killed hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah.
But we are worried because, you know, there was a kid that was bitten at the Summer Games here last year. A little kid, somebody hit a ball and it hit a prairie dog and it injured it, and a little kid went over to try to pick it up to help it, and it bit the kid. And that kid had to go through a battery of tests and shots and whatever because they were obviously real concerned because we've got a known carrier of the bubonic plague in a prairie dog. You know, if they weren't real concerned, they would have just said, well, take an aspirin and put some ice on it. But the end game really is to try to get the prairie dog removed from the endangered species list because the federal government should not be involved. Let me tell your listeners this. This is something we've asked our senators. We've had both of our senators out here to look at this. We've had Ken Salazar come out when he was the head of the Department of Interior.
Love him.
That kind of thing. But, we call him King Ken around here.
Yeah, we have other names.
But what is the total cost? I mean, when the federal government's looking at making cuts, and now they're cutting, you know, they've made some cuts to some airports and some air traffic control towers and that kind of thing, White House tours. I mean, they're really making a hurt. What is the total cost of the administration of the Endangered Species Act? When you look at the hundreds, thousands of species in this country that are managed under that, and the amount of people and the salaries that are paid, the benefits, but then also just the infrastructure. And what does it really cost America every year to protect some of these species? Now, I'm not for, hey, let's kill them all. I'm all for conservation. There again, that's why we're not saying, hey, let's kill them all. I don't hate prairie dogs. I don't want to kill all the prairie dogs. I just want to move them. But when you look at what we're spending on just the Utah prairie dog times thousands, what are we spending? I mean, when we're looking at places where we could make some cuts where it wouldn't really hurt a whole bunch, if anything, when you look at what we're spending on just the litigation, when you look at what we're spending on the administration of these programs, it is billions of dollars a year, I can say that.
For really nothing. For nothing.
What's that? For no net benefit.
Right.
When we're protecting a lot of these species. But I'd like to get a number because I'd like to take that to the American people to say, do you realize we're spending this much money on this? I mean, remember when we had the big fight about NASA, and is it really necessary?
Oh, yeah.
Do we really need to find out if there's atoms on the moon or cells on the moon? You know, do we need to spend all that money to do that? Well, I think the Endangered Species Act is one of those where people don't realize how much money is going into this. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's all of us taxpayers. It's just a program that, you know, we really don't realize that we're spending the money on. And
this
all could have been resolved really, really easy. Let me tell you this really quickly, because I'm sure every endangered species like this, there's a very easy fix here. We had an old farmer show up at a meeting, one of these updrip meetings we had. Which, by the way, now they're not having those public meetings anymore. They've shut down the public meetings
because
they got tired of the public asking questions.
That's what they do.
And so this old farmer showed up and he said, how come you guys can't take some of the federal land you have? You don't need to spend the 5 years doing your soil study and vegetation study and your archaeological study and building nest boxes. Take any land you have, plant some alfalfa there or Kentucky bluegrass, whatever you want. Plant it out there, water it, and cut it regularly, and throw a few thousand prairie dogs, just trap a bunch of them, take them all out there. You would keep 100% of them alive every year because, you know, when you're taking it off of a golf course that's manicured every other day, watered every day probably, and throwing it out in the middle of sagebrush somewhere that you've prepared and it is ideal habitat for a prairie dog, and then you're scratching your head wondering why they all die. Why can't you just go create a golf course-like setting or a backyard-like setting out on federal land, water it regularly, and cut it every week? All the prairie dogs would live. Why can't you do that?
But see, if we had a logical conclusion, we wouldn't need them.
It's not really.
We've asked that question every meeting we've ever met with them since then, and their answer is always the same. And this is you don't know whether to laugh or cry. Mm-hmm. Their answer has been, we don't think we could get the water. And so their answer is, we can continue to spend hundreds of millions of dollars, this federal money, not to mention there again the state and local funds that are being spent on all these issues, because they don't think they could get enough water to run a few sprinklers. I mean, this is the federal government. We can put a man on the moon, we can fight multiple wars at one time, we can do all this stuff, but we don't think we could get our hands on some water in order to be able to water that land, because there is no other excuse. That's the only excuse they can come up with, is they don't think they can have water. We've told them, we've promised them, if you were to say tomorrow morning on that talk radio station that I've told you about here in Cedar City, if you were to say tomorrow morning, we are going to create an environment out there where we think prairie dogs are really going to thrive, we just need a few water shares, they would have more water shares than they could handle donated by noon tomorrow. They wouldn't have to buy one of them. They wouldn't have to spend a penny on one of them. They would just have them donated by some of these farmers, by some of these other people who have some water shares, some water rights, that just want to get them off of their own land, you know, that are tired of fighting them.
Yeah, sure.
Fighting the issue. And
that'd be money
they won't
well
do
spent.
It. Because that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Because they would all live out there. They would all survive out there. And at the end of the day, they're not interested in that. They're interested in kicking it down the road and acting like they want to try to get them all out there. But when it comes down to actually getting them all out there, that's a much different story.
Unbelievable.
We got a letter. Our group got a letter this last week from PETA.
Oh God! Hold that.
You got to hear this.
We're going to take a quick break.
Hold that thought, Matt. We got to come right back with you.
Okay.
We're going to take a really quick break. Thank our advertisers. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM. It's too late to call, so don't do it. Call us next week. You're listening to Community Radio for the North State.
Tell them not to call, and they'll call.
Don't call. We're not giving you the number.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. Can't touch this.
Prairie dog.
My music hit so hard.
And we're back with Matt Munson, Council for Iron County, Utah. We're talking about the Pacific Legal Foundation, prairie dogs, and the devastation of a rural community. So, Matt, I'm just so excited about PLF taking on this case, because they only take cases that they think are precedent-setting. So this could be a great thing for everybody, not just Utah.
We literally, I almost cried. Myself and several other people here, I figured out last year, I put about 500 hours into the prairie dog issue, and several other people here and just put in countless hours. And so for PLF to come in and there's only so much that I can do as an attorney as far as, you know, committing resources and time and that kind of thing. And so for them to come in with the resources and the expertise and the knowledge that they have, to take our case, it literally, we felt like we won the lottery. We really did.
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
We've been so grateful to them for taking this, because they've gotten it to a place we never ever would have gotten on our own.
Yeah, and PLF is the video that they have
on your website that shows the community is very heartwarming. But how has the community pulled together as you guys fight this battle moving forward? Has it pretty much unified your whole community?
The hardest thing that we were up against was just people not feeling like, you know, we were really gonna be able to do it. You just had a lot of people, you know, for 40 years it's just been this way, and nothing's gonna change. You guys are gonna say, you know, you guys are gonna make some noise, but nothing's really gonna change at the end of the day. And it really wasn't until we were able to tell people, the Pacific Legal Foundation, these guys are big, these guys are good, these guys know what they're doing, these guys actually, you know, agree. I haven't spoken with an attorney at the Attorney General's office. I've spoken with the Attorney General here in the state of Utah, who's a big supporter of our cause. I haven't spoken with anyone with a law degree yet that disagrees with the arguments that we're making.
Right.
And so we're thrilled, because at the end of the day, you know, it's not about having a good case. It's about getting the case where it needs to be. And that is in the 10th Circuit. What we're planning on, what we're hoping for, is that the 10th Circuit, which hasn't ruled on this matter, will come to a conclusion different from that of the 9th Circuit, where you guys are.
Mm-hmm.
The 9th Circuit, we certainly don't see eye to eye with the 9th Circuit, in the Midwestern states, and neither does the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court overrules the 9th Circuit much more than any other circuit, for that matter.
Right. And on your website, petpo.org, people can find updates as this case progresses.
Yep.
And I encourage people to become a member, because you will get emails. They can follow your organization on Facebook, and this precedent-setting case can make a big difference for a lot of people fighting similar battles all across the country.
Well, and we're hopeful even that it's going to go further than just those cases where the federal government's involved, where they maybe shouldn't be, but that it's going to go further and really take a second look. The Endangered Species Act almost breathed its last breath there in the early to mid-90s. I mean, Congress was taking a good hard look at what they were spending and what they were getting there. But then you had the radical environmentalists like PETA. PETA sent us a letter this last week, and this is just hilarious. Their letter, I'll just read a little bit of it to you. Their letter is just, again, if you didn't know, this is from Sarah Preston, the manager of the Cruelty Investigations Department for PETA. And she says, that we're PETA and we care about animals and we have 3 million members, blah, blah, blah. Mm. She says, just know that removing animals never works in the long run, blah, blah, blah. So she says, the key to keeping all species of prairie dogs away is to target food sources. And she suggests things like eliminating food sources and encouraging them to leave by covering the ground with hardware mesh, spraying plants with pepper-based repellents, and evicting animals by placing repellents such as rags soaked with ammonia or mothballs inside or near burrows. Now, if Miss Preston were to come out here and do any of that,
yeah, right to the
Miss Preston would be thrown in jail.
Yeah,
so Miss Preston didn't do her homework.
Aaron County Sheriff. Because he won't do it.
Oh,
Aaron County Sheriff has said he'll stand against any federal officer that comes into this county to try to enforce this.
So
stuff.
PETA has not done their homework then.
That's a shocker. That's just the thing is these guys are supposedly, in favor of whatever. And, if you do what they've advised us to do, you're committing a felony offense. And so it's one of those things where, there again, we're kind of trying to play within the parameters. But at the end of the day, if these federal officials will really do what's in the best interest of everyone involved, including the prairie dog should be out and about on the prairie, where it's contributing to the ecosystem as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many fewer owls and hawks and eagles and badgers and foxes and coyotes and snakes and that kind of thing there are out there because there are no prairie dogs out there?
Right.
All of those species are suffering because there aren't prairie dogs out there. I mean, if you look at it as a whole, because the prairie dogs are living on private property where none of those predators or other animals that benefit from having the prairie dog around, they won't come on the private property. But
well,
the prairie dog will.
And you know, we're looking at this from a scientific standpoint. We all know the science is faulty. We know that it's inaccurate
well,
and
there,
it's inefficient. No, there
issue.
Isn't. And no. and the real issue here is a constitutional one, which is stripping us of our rights to private property and controlling what we do as individuals in a free country. So at the end of the day, there's your big picture.
Yep, and I just would just, any of your listeners, you know, if we don't all stand up in our own little individual ways, and soon, we are literally going to wake up one day and we're going to be England. I mean, we're going to be some of these countries that are, you know, that are not like America, where you can own what you want to own and do what you want to do. And, you know, I realize there are some restrictions that can be placed. But if the federal government had to start cutting checks to these people for the harm that's being done to their own property, this policy would have changed 40 years ago.
Sure. Well,
but they don't have to. They haven't had to.
At the end of the day,
it's
about paying attention to, I mean, your House of Representatives is where the financing comes from for your federal agencies. So it's about making sure in 2014, I mean, it's just, let's just plant the seed.
Mm-hmm.
It's about making sure in 2014 that the House doesn't wind up flipped. Mm-hmm. Don't see that happening, but pay attention to who's in there. Pay attention to what they think is a good use of your money. And whether you agree with them 100% or not, this is no time to sit on the sidelines or become an ideologue. I mean, this is war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and ask them. Oh. I would encourage all of your listeners, because, again, this shouldn't just be coming from the state of Utah. This should be coming from every state.
Hey,
in the
Matt,
union.
This is
every.
We're
wrapping up here. Thank you so much for joining us. I knew it was going to be a great show.
Opportunity. God bless you guys for what you're doing.
No,
much appreciated.
Thank you.
Keep up the good fight.
Somebody's got to win in order to keep everybody else in the game.
Yeah, that's true. That's right.
Thanks
that's
a lot.
We're trying.
Okay.
Don Shulman is next at KCNR Shasta Redding.
Bye-bye.